Welcome to the Home Tech Podcast, show number 9 for January 27th, 2011. And it is an evening and we are live on Ustream, although nobody joined us, but that's all right. I'm joined by the two guys that join me each and every week, and I'm glad they're here tonight. Brian Burgess. Brian is a blogger. He is blogging for simplehelp.net, as well as got the 101, the Home Server Show 101 series going. Brian, I saw those out there.
Yep. We're working on that.
Couple posts. So if you go to thehomeservershow.com, you have a little 101 section. We talked about that, I think, way back on the first podcast. But you actually are getting some posts out there now. So good work.
Thank you.
Also have Christian Johnson. Christian does all is there anything you don't do, Christian? You do just about everything, right? If it's computer or web related or just all around smart stuff, you're pretty much in the middle of it, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So this week, if you've been hanging out at our site, theaverageguy.tv, you probably noticed it was just a little slow. I've done a bunch of work on it, and I think I didn't optimize some stuff, and I'm sure I screwed up some code in the process, and Christian was good enough to go out there and get that fixed. So if you haven't been out to the site in a while, theaverageguy.tv, check it out. I made a change last week to the site, added each of the podcasts that I do is now out in the right-hand side toolbar, and you can get access to those right from the site, as well as subscribe to iTunes. And the RSS feeds are there if you want to put that in your various RSS reader. And I think we've had a lot of talk about the Zune player, and I don't know how many folks are listening to Zune, but we're not in the Zune marketplace yet. We are in the iTunes marketplace, or iTunes, what do they call it, store?
Yep.
Is that what they call it on iTunes, the iTunes store?
I believe it's a marketplace.
Okay, so the iTunes marketplace. It doesn't matter. If you go to iTunes and search for Home Tech Podcast, we're in there somewhere. So you can get that either way, and all that information is out there for you to find. If you want to get a hold of us, and you can send us an email. I actually got an email this week for someone making a suggestion on the Fitness Tech Podcast, but you can email us podcast@theaverageguy.tv. It's always good to know those emails make it to me. And if you have ideas for the show or things you want us to talk about, or you've got a question, I got a couple smart guys here. Send us an email and we will get right back to you. Guys, it's been a crazy week for me. I'm just super busy at work, and I put in a 10-mile run right before the podcast tonight. So if you see me starting to just kind of shake and then I disappear off the camera, just carry on with the show. Would you? All right. I wanted to spend some time. Well, let's get started with I came across an article that I found pretty useful, and I don't want to dwell on each one of these, but it talked about 10 useful Windows 7 productivity tips. So some of them are things folks don't often think about or know that exists inside Windows 7. A couple weeks ago, we spent some time inside the control panel. And I found that pretty helpful. I learned a few things as we went through that as well. So real quick, I'm going to go through these. And guys, what I'm looking for from you is just a little feedback. Do you use them? Do you find it helpful? And then, you know, any other thing related to that, all right?
Sounds good.
So here we go. Number one, Windows 7 shortcuts. Now, shortcuts have been around a long time. Keyboard shortcuts have been around for a long time, way back into the DOS days. Brian, are you a keyboard shortcut guy? Do you use any of the shortcuts available to you?
As far as keyboard shortcuts, I'm not really a keyboard ninja, no, but I do use the desktop shortcuts, and also in the new Windows 7 taskbar. So, yeah.
Okay, so a few. Christian, you a shortcut guy?
Yeah, I use a lot of shortcuts for typing in Microsoft Word, and sometimes if I lock myself out of the system that I'm diagnosing where it only has, you know, keyboard and mouse USB ports, and you can no longer use the USB and keyboard because you were dumb enough to disable USB when you were diagnosing the system.
Right.
Then you can plug in the old PS2 keyboard and start clicking around with all the keys to function as the mouse until you get where you want to go. In those regards, I've learned a fair amount of shortcuts. Also, my wireless keyboard has a lot of quick start buttons that I can program with Windows 7, so that's kind of neat.
Yeah, there's a lot of a lot of shortcuts that have to do with that Windows button, right? That showed up back. Right. Was that an XP that showed up
Vista or
Days Vista Days? So if you hold that down, like so, for example, if you hold that down and the up, down, left, and right arrow will move to your active Windows. So if you don't want to grab your mouse and click over to the window to make it active, hold the Windows key down, push the buttons, and it'll move you around your screen to get to the active window. One of the ones I find real helpful is Windows L, which if you have at work, will lock your computer. And sometimes some people go Control Alt Delete and then they select lock the computer, and that's a couple steps. Windows L locks it, much like Windows P prints it. So
yeah,
there's a few out there that are kind of helpful. And the shortcuts, like I said, go way back to the days of DOS, when I think everything was a Windows or was a keyboard shortcut before the mouse really came along. But there are tons of shortcuts embedded in Windows 7. And if you want to try a few out, we'll have the link to this article as well, and you can give it a try. Number two, customize jump lists. So jump lists allow you to quickly open folders and windows that you use frequently. Are you guys using jump lists at all?
I do to a certain extent, not as much as I could. It is a new feature in Windows 7, but it definitely could improve productivity.
Yeah, in what way, Brian? I mean, what do you think? If you were going to do one thing that would help you out and use it, what would...
Well, if I have a lot of Word documents open, you just click on the Word icon in the taskbar, and then you'll have a list of the most recent documents that you've been working on.
Okay. So a helpful productivity tool does require a little bit of setup, I think. Christian, do you use that at all?
Yeah, really, I don't use jump lists that much. Okay. I mean, they're there, and sometimes I'll accidentally unpin or pin something, but I don't really use them, though.
Okay. Number three, we talked about when we talked about the control panel, and that's that reliability monitor. And it's got some – in Windows 7, it's actually kind of a report of the activity on your PC, especially when it comes to system outages or system problems or applications that ceased working. And so if you have an application that continues to just kind of quit on you, you can go back to that the reliability report, get an idea how often it's failed. I do that sometimes when folks complain, hey, this is crashing on me all the time. So I'll go back and look and just see exactly how many times it's been doing it. I think you can also select have Windows find a solution. Now, I click that every time. Have either of you had any luck with Windows actually finding a solution?
I haven't, no.
Yeah.
I think maybe they just once.
Really? I think maybe. They do that just to make us feel good.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that actually works. So I'd like to hear from anybody if that actually did solve a problem podcast at theaverageguy.tv and let us know. I just haven't had any luck with that. That reliability monitor is really cool. If you just go click on the start and then the type in the search. It says search programs and files down there on the Windows 7, and type in reliability monitor. It'll take you right to it. I found the easiest way to get there. So that's one way to do it. Number four, we talked about this, and Brian, I know you're a huge fan of this, and that's Nynite to install multiple software applications.
Absolutely. It's one of my most favorite websites ever. I do a lot of reformatting of my systems and other when I'm working on other people's computers, it's a great way to reinstall a lot of freeware, and it's just a matter of clicking the programs you want, downloading an installer file, and letting it go.
Kind of does all those. So if you're reimaging your PC and you want to get those applications without all the junk and bloatware that can come with them.
Yeah, that's one thing to point out is that it will not install the extra bloatware, like you're saying, like extra toolbars or programs that you don't want or, hijack your homepage or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. And how often have you installed a toolbar that you didn't intend to get? I see that in Java, when you're installing the Java runtime client, it wants to install one of those toolbars or something along that. And so I always know the kids have been installing stuff when toolbars start showing up in Internet Explorer.
Yeah, like the Ask toolbar. I mean,
right. I just installed some HP printer software this week. I put a new image on my PC that I'm using right now, and about 2 weeks ago, and I installed the HP software, and they've got that stupid stuff. There's an HP toolbar that they've got, you know, a piece of bloatware they got that hits Internet Explorer. That was the first thing to go. I had to have that thing undeleted and removed. So yeah, so this Ninite, it's just ninite.com. Is it .com or .org? I think it's .com.
It's .com.
And check that out. It is very useful. Number five, disable arrow snap. And that's the arrow snap is when you take your window and you move it to the left or to the right, and it automatically resizes, or I guess you can go to the top as well. It resizes it automatically to the screen. And while that might seem, when Windows 7 first came out, they advertised that, Microsoft did, on TV as kind of being this new feature, right? Because you could snap a window to the left and snap a window to the right, and it would, you'd have two pages perfectly side by side, right? Now, how many times have you slid a window over and it just automatically takes up the full screen? You guys experienced that?
Yep.
Kind of annoying. And so while arrow snap and arrow shake, now I don't know what arrow shake is. What's Christian, do you know what arrow shake is?
Yeah, arrow shake is like if you have a lot of windows open, you can click your mouse, hold on your mouse on one of the top window bars of whatever window you're at, and if you shake it really fast with your mouse, all the other windows behind it will auto minimize.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. So like
I'd probably close the show out.
Yeah. No, I'm always the guy to have like 20 windows open. So yeah, you just give it a tiny shake and it'll bring it'll minimize everything, and you can even shake it again and it's gonna reopen everything.
Really? Okay. All right. Well, sometimes those things happen by mistake. I can't see Shake doing that. I know personally I've had trouble with the window with the snap where it goes full size, and then I've got I didn't intend for it to be full size. I actually wanted it to be. So you can disable that. So if you go into the settings, you can go in and turn that arrow shake and arrow snap off if you're having problems with it. So if it's not being as productive as you want it to be, go out there and you can disable it. Okay, number six, customized notification area. So Windows 7 brought along an overhauled notification area, or that little area in the systems tray that's over by the clock on the bottom right-hand side, if you're wondering where that is. And it really was designed to help people better manage all those tiny little icons. So where they used to stream all the way across the bottom of your screen, now there's just that little up arrow, right? So if you click on that, it's usually over by your the PC issue, that icon where that looks like a little flag. And so if you click on that, there's a whole bunch of hidden icons in there, and they will notify you of what's going on. There are some customizations. Guys, have either one of you tried the customizations or changing those to get custom settings?
The way I use it is actually I disable it. I like to see everything that's running over by my clock. So you
select customize. So you open it, customizes at the bottom, and then you've got some options, right? There's about six options there.
Yeah, and there's a checkbox for show all notifications.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've done the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The
arrow annoys me, I guess.
Show all icons and notifications on the taskbar. So that basically sets it back to the way it was in Windows Vista.
Yep.
Okay. All right, number seven, using checkboxes. So this is a simple yet innovative new feature in Windows 7. It says that you can enable checkboxes for files and folders in Windows 7 so that selecting them in bulk becomes easier and quicker. So if you have a whole list of files or of folders and you want to select them all, you can enable this checkbox feature, which instead of having to click on one and hold your shift key down or hold the control key down and click each one individually, it'll just line them up and you have that little box, like it's kind of the one box to rule them all, right? Or you can, like in your email, like in my Yahoo email, if I want to delete all the spam, I click it in one and it selects them all. You ever use that feature?
I don't know. I just use control or shift and then click on what I want. But to enable that, you go into folder options in the control panel and go through, well, you click on the View tab, and then you scroll down, and there's a checkbox that says Use Checkboxes to Select Items. And you can turn it on or off there. So
actually, there's quite a few options in there, right? You can find files, and a lot of people don't realize this, that there's lots of files and folders that are hidden on your PC. They're there. You don't see them. Microsoft hides them for whatever reason. They don't really want you messing with them. That's probably too simplified of an answer. Christian, you know why they hide those?
Yeah, some of them are internal system files that if they're accidentally deleted or tampered with, you're not going to have a booting PC when you restart. So in a lot of cases, if you do have them unhidden and you try and delete something, a lot of times it'll say access denied or file in use. So that kind of helps you. But really, there's just it's a pain to even look at them in the first place. But yeah, additionally, like with the checkbox selecting everything, I don't have that enabled because all I do is hit Control A on my keyboard as my keyboard shortcut, and
there
that
you
does
go.
The same thing. So.
Another very helpful keyboard shortcut, by the way. I probably use that one more than anything when I want to select it. You know, 2 weeks ago when Audacity crashed and I had to recover the whole recording for this show, there was actually a hidden file that I needed, so I had to go in and enable that show hidden files. And that helped me recover what I needed to get. So sometimes it's probably an advanced feature, and most people don't need to use that. But you can, if you didn't know there's hidden system files and you're just one of those kind of guys or gals that loves to see that kind of stuff, same spot, there's an option there that says show hidden files. And
yeah, and there's actually a difference between showing hidden files and showing protected operating system files.
Okay,
so,
good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know. Yeah, so there's some granularity there.
Most people don't need to see the operating system files.
And they don't want to. I mean, I can't tell you how long it's been since I've been in the Windows folder. I mean, I just don't go in there anymore. It seemed like in Windows XP days, I was always monkeying around with something in there to make a driver work or something along those lines. But with Vista and past, I just don't spend a lot of time in that System 32? That was the one that you would have to be in. For whatever reason, you just don't have to do that anymore with Windows 7. Okay, three more. Pin any app or folder to the taskbar. Actually, this came with Windows 7. I find it very helpful. All my browsers, so I download and install Chrome, Safari, Firefox, and Explorer so I can test the website in them. And I pin each one of those down in the taskbar on the bottom for easy access. Have you guys found that helpful in Windows 7? And there was a change from Vista.
Absolutely. I use it all the time. My most important and most used programs I pin to the taskbar.
Yeah, I only really do it with initial configuration, but I've kept the way things are pinned the same for eons now. So.
Oh, very cool. Hey, you know what, guys? I want to let you know my wife's upstairs listening to the show live. She just IM'd me on Skype. Yeah.
Is this who El Mopio is?
Must be. I don't know, but I just got this Skype message from her, and she said that she loves the pinning option. So there's one vote from my wife, Sarah, listening to the podcast live. Hi, Sarah, upstairs. Good to have a fan out there.
We also
in
have
chat.
Three guests out there, so if you want to log in and join us in chat, feel free to.
Yeah, you just go into Ustream and set up an account. If you don't have one, it takes just a minute, and then you can join us in chat. She says hi. I think she has more fun pinging me in Skype where people can't see it than she does out there at theaverageguy.tv/live. So, okay, so that's pinning the app. I use that a lot too, and I just find that feature great. Christian, did you say do you use that? Do you pin stuff to your taskbar much, or do you leave it kind of stock?
I mean, I used it to pin stuff to get it the way I liked it, but after that, I was like, I don't want to change it.
Yeah. So once you get it set up, you just kind of leave it, right?
Feature of habit.
Yes. Number nine, multiple monitors. Of course, multiple monitors has been supported for a long time now. It's gotten easier and easier and easier. I have two down here. I've got a smaller one, and then I've got a large 26-inch monitor. I assume both of you guys are running at least two monitors, right?
I have four.
Really? And all on the same PC? And do you use multiple video cards?
Well, no, it's actually on a different PC, and I use a program called Input Director, and that works as a KVM, a virtual KVM switch, and allows you to switch switch over to other computers and other monitors.
Now, Christian,
well, what do you got?
On the computer I always use, which is referred to as the beast now, I only have one 24-inch monitor. So, yeah, I know, chastise me on that point. But it is the monitor, and it still is, and I've had it for a couple years now. It's the Dell WPF 2408, I think. And, wow, what a fantastic picture. 1080p quality with my XFX 6950, which is ATI's latest video card. And their latest video card supports up to three 30-inch monitors on one video card. So now I do have the PC to kind of make that mojo happen. Really, the only thing that's stopping me is kind of the real estate in terms of desk space, because there's like left side of the desk monitor, right side of the desk, so you can't really move those wooden beams there. But you know, I might just do a demo job. But I love it. I could probably definitely go with 2 24-inches, which is the way my dad's is set up. So sometimes if I get frustrated with all the 50,000 windows I have open, I'll go down there and do stuff. But I'd say at least for me, I really get bugged when the screen size isn't at least 24 inches anymore. So, you know, looking at these dinky desktop screen monitors, you know, I always just tell someone that if you can pay the money to have someone fix your computer, you can pay the money to go out and save your eyes from strain and headache for the next whatever extent of your life you will have remaining in the digital age.
Well, once you go with at least two monitors, you'll never go back.
Yep.
Yeah, it's hard to get, you know, especially when you're comparing or copy and pasting, or if you're doing some editing, that's the only way to go. And, you know, monitor prices have really come down. I remember when CRTs, you know, a 19-inch CRT was $500. And, you know, now you can get a 24-inch monitor for $250, maybe $279, depends on where and what. But, there's just really no reason to do it. I've got a smaller one that I'm going to replace with a larger one, and then I have this big 26-inch monitor that it's just fantastic. Christian, to your point though, not all monitors are made the same, and my 26-inch monitor struggles to support some of the higher resolutions that I would expect it to. It's got some odd frequency requirements, and it's definitely got some limitations. Now I'm getting old and I got glasses, and so I leave it at a fairly high resolution. But if I wanted to crank that down, it would not handle it as well as your Dell monitor. That's kind of the workhorse of the Dell series, and those monitors are pretty nice. So it does, you get what you pay for, I think, with monitors, and it does pay to get maybe a little better one that has some higher resolutions if you're going to try and jam everything onto, you know, the real estate you're given on a monitor. So the days of a single monitor are long gone. If you're still on one, you might want to consider two, I guess, is what I'm saying. Hey, the last one I want to talk about is the taskbar. So the taskbar allows you, you know, apart from pinning things to it down below, is there anything else that you guys know of that you found really helpful using the taskbar down below on?
Well, you can actually move your icons around on the taskbar as well. So,
sure.
You know, if you want them in a certain order, you just move them around with the mouse. One other trick I've done is brought back the quick launch bar.
Okay.
And I could write that up as a post. It's kind of tricky, but you can get it back.
It is out there. Yeah, so the taskbar, like we said earlier, changed in Windows 7, and so there's some features out there. There's a good article out on Lifehacker that will drop I'll drop the link to. Talks about some of the things that you can do with the taskbar. It is pretty powerful. I think it's probably the most underutilized. Somebody at Microsoft spent 2 years supercharging this taskbar, and I don't think anybody uses it. I'll just be honest. I think it gets pinned. People pin things to it, and that's it.
Yep.
But there are tons of other features. So 10 useful things that you can do with Windows 7. Hopefully you're off and using Windows 7 by now. I know actually last night on the Home Server Show we were talking, and there's still some folks out there using Windows XP. And so hopefully those days are coming to an end and you're making your way over to Windows 7. Okay, Brian, you put a post out this week on simplehelp.net. Now, maybe it wasn't this week. Maybe it was last week.
It was just last night, actually.
Oh, really? Jeez, that's how long my days are these days. Where you talked about remotely accessing your Windows PC from an iPad, iPhone, or an iPod Touch. Talk a little bit about that post.
Right. So there's a program called splashtop.com. That you can download for your iOS device, you know, whether it's an iPad or iPhone or iPod Touch, and you install the Splashtop remote software on the PC that you want to connect to, and then there's an app you can get from the App Store that you install on your device. And as long as the Splashtop remote software is running on the computer you want to connect to, you can launch the app on your iOS device, and it's just like sitting in front of your computer, and you have remote access.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's
a Windows desktop on your iPad.
Right. Yeah. Full screen. If you want to head over to the post, I put it in the chat room. It looks mm-hmm. great. It's beautiful. And there's not a whole lot of lag. Like, sometimes you have remote connections and there's a lot of lag, you know, between what you're doing and what actually happens on the computer. And this Splashtop, I mean, it's only $1.99 and it's the best one that I've used so far.
Does it matter? Do you have to be on the same network for this?
Yeah, it only works over Wi-Fi as far as I know.
Well, but can I be, if I'm at somebody else's house, do you have to be on the same subnet or on the same network for it to work? Or can I remote, you know, can I go through an IP address to my house and access my PCs?
As far as I know, you have to be on the same network.
Okay. All right. So it would be a way of sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
And watching TV and remote controlling your desktop.
Yeah, and the cool thing is you can transfer, when you connect, have the video and sound transfer to your iPad, for instance, so you can watch movies that way from your PC, or I can actually access Windows Home Server through my Windows 7 PC from my iPad.
Wow. And so how are you? So you're with your home server, you're just invoking the connection of the connector.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like
coming up right now.
Yeah, it's like sitting right in front of your screen.
Wow.
Your PC right. screen. So
that's pretty cool. So it's $1.99.
Yep.
It's in the app. Do I have to go to the App Store to get that? So to get it for PC, to get the client to run on the PC, where do I have to go to get that?
Splashdot.com.
Oh, okay. So it's just a regular download, a regular download and client install.
Right.
Wow. Very cool. Christian, what do you think of that?
Yeah, that's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, that allows you kind of some cross-platform usage to get your iPad. Now, really, Brian, did you try that on your Touch?
I haven't tried it on my iPod Touch yet, no. I think the screen something. Would be a little too small.
But, yeah, I was
but it can
say,
be done. And yeah. They also offer an Android app as well.
Really?
Yep.
Well, I'll have to give that a try. That's kind of cool. What other ways? Oh, go ahead, Brian.
Well, also, if you're in a Mac environment, they offer a Mac client for it as well.
Okay. So you can remote control both Mac and PC. How's the video? Did you stream video from your PC to your iPad? And how's the video quality? And does that really work right?
Yeah, it works perfectly.
Really?
It looks great. Sounds fine. It's like almost like you had the video locally on the device. So
wow. And were you streaming that from your home server, or were you streaming that from a PC?
Actually, from my home server through the Windows 7
yeah.
Computer to the iPad. So
wow, no stuttering or no?
No.
None of that, huh?
Nope.
Wow. I guess, you know, I don't know why I'm so skeptical, but that sounds pretty cool. There are other ways to remote control your desktop, though, right? Christian, what are some ways that as you're trying to get remote control of, you know, you're one place and you want to be another, what are some common ones that you use?
The easiest thing I use with a lot of people is called TeamViewer, and that's a free software. Actually, I think Microsoft owns the company, but it's a free software. It's been out there for a while now, and it's PC to PC or Mac to PC, so it works either way. And yeah, it's just free on the fly remote desktop, and it supports whiteboard and all those kind of common features. So I really like it because it's not like where if you try and use the default remote desktop software that comes with Windows, you don't have to configure the firewall ports and all that kind of stuff like you normally would. So this is great if you're trying to remotely solve a client's problem and you want a simple setup. You just say, here, go to teamviewer.com, get the download, and then they just give you the ID and you're good to go. So yeah.
What's the cost on that?
Free.
Really?
Oh yeah. I use it all the time. All the time.
Yeah, it works similar to what is it? Go to my PC.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is it encrypted? I mean, is it a secure connection when you're making?
It is now that I think of it. Mm-hmm.
And it's what's it called again? TeamViewer?
Yes, TeamViewer.
All right, we'll have to drop that
and,
link in the show notes.
Actually, you can get that from Nynite if you want to try it out.
There we go. Everything
Going
comes back
to
Nynite, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It all comes back to Nynite.
It's all in a circle.
Okay, so Christian, I can not only – okay, so is that a tool that would allow me then if I'm at work – can I access my home PCs with TeamViewer?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's not like home server, but, I mean, you just have to have the PC on at home or whatever. And, yeah.
Right.
But,
so yeah. It has a little client that's installed and it's running. It's waiting for you to connect to it.
Exactly.
Type deal. So how different is that than the new Windows Live Mesh that's out there, right? Kind of some similar functionality. It's got a little file sharing in it. Is it a very similar functionality?
I'm not really the guy to do the comparison because I haven't used Mesh yet. But I just would comment that that's interesting because this company is Microsoft. I mean, it's owned by Microsoft.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of interested to see, you know, are they just recycling technology? Because it's weird to me. I don't know about you. But it's weird to me that they would come – I think TeamViewer is way better than some of the stuff they have set up right now. I just find it weird that Microsoft can own three or four really good remote desktop apps, but they can't seem to like prioritize and consolidate the best one, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that Windows Live Mesh was you know, Windows Mesh, and then it was Windows Live Sync. And it was two technologies that merged together.
Right.
And so that's a struggle, I think, with Microsoft in general is to take on some of these technologies. In the 90s and in the early part of the century here, they were, I should say the last decade, they were acquiring companies like crazy. And I think they're still acquiring some, but not at the breakneck pace they were at one point in time. And, of course, once you buy that software, you got to integrate it, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I still think we should start calling them Huge Soft because there's nothing micro about what they're doing anymore.
Yeah, that's good. Huge Soft. Well, so that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that one. I use Mesh fairly consistently. In fact, we're using it tonight. I just stream to Ustream. I have a separate PC that is actually out in the living room, and I kind of piggyback off that. It does the recording and the streaming to Ustream. And so I don't want to go out there. I mean, I need to be back here doing the show, so I just use Mesh to remote into it. That is a tool that I could use with I could go across, you know, I could do it across the street or I could do it across the ocean. You know, kind of it works remotely. So there's a bunch of different technologies. Anything else? We mentioned GoToMyPC, TeamViewer, Mesh. What? Any other remote technologies that folks could be using to remote to their either work, into work, out of work, at home? Anything we missed there? I'm sure there's others, but
OpenVNC is one.
Yeah. I always found that hard to use. I don't know why.
Yeah. And then if you have home server, you can do a lot. But
yeah, there's a lot of different.
A lot of people don't have home servers, so
no, they don't. But there are even in Windows 7, there's a couple different ways to get remote access to PCs, and you don't have to be there anymore. That used to be, 5 to 6 to 7 years ago, that was still pretty difficult, and maybe it's more like 10 years ago. That was pretty difficult to get access or control to a PC when you weren't there. Today, that's just a no-brainer, right? We don't really struggle with that much anymore, do we?
I don't know. One thing worth mentioning, though, about GoToMyPC, that is a commercial program, so
right.
you'll have to pay for that, but yeah. Not TeamViewer.
And it does have pretty good encryption, right? It's a Citrix product, has great encryption, and is a very safe way. They do make a really good – Citrix has been doing remote access for a long time, and they're the leaders in that. But I'll have to try out this TeamViewer. Is that what it's called, Christian? TeamViewer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, John and I are using it all the time, too. Another one I just remembered is, how about GoToMeeting? Does anyone know about that?
Yeah, that's the same Citrix stuff, the same family as GoToMyPC and GoToExpress.
See, it's like, how many different freaking names do you need for the same product,
Well, they're marketing it in different ways. Hey, it's not remote control, but let's not forget inside of Skype, there's some features that allow me to view, we've done this with each other from time to time. Hey, let me see what you're looking at. And if you're in Skype, point to point, I can just turn over my desktop to you and you can look at it. Now, you can't remote control it, so it's a little bit different. But if you're trying to help somebody through something, 90% of the time looking at the screen is very 100% of the time looking at the screen is very helpful. And so you can use Skype for that as well, and we use that all the time.
Yeah, another thing worth mentioning is Live Mesh is part of the Microsoft what's the suite of programs called?
Live Essentials.
Live Essentials, right.
Yeah.
Yep, and it's free too. So.
Right, it is free. Sarah just pinged in and she said she knows there's just she gets some support from a company that uses Rescue Me, and I think have you guys heard of that before? Rescue Me?
I haven't, no.
Very similar. There is a bunch of commercial tech applications out there kind of designed for the tech user who's having to control people's PCs and fix them. I think that's one of those. So a bunch that are out there. I guess what I'm saying is there's a ton of different ways. If you're not taking advantage of at least one of them and you need them, that technology is not difficult.
Actually, Unreal Shots in the chat room says you can remote control via Messenger, MSN Messenger.
Oh, yeah, you can do that as well. And I think even Yahoo Messenger has some stuff. Andrew is in chat. Welcome, Andrew. Good to see you. We had a couple people drop in there. Yeah, Messenger, I think Yahoo Messenger, some of those, I'm sure AOL Messenger. God, when was the last time you guys used it, AOL? Did you guys ever use AOL Messenger? Christian's looking at me like Christian is like six.
Yeah, I know.
Windows 3.1 maybe.
Yeah. And Christian, did you ever use ICQ?
Weirdly, I did create an account just because like one or two impossible to find Russian BIOS modders had an ICQ that I contacted them with. But it's like I don't even want to talk about how obtuse ICQ is. It like makes you register and then it sends you this huge ID and then it says in order to get rid of the ID and change your ICQ to your email address, you have to go through this activation process. So then you do the activation process and nothing happens. And I tried it like three different times, three different account names, and it just doesn't work. So, it's to me, it's just like wannabe IM software that needs to sell its company to.
Yeah, you know, it was one of the in its day, it was one of the four, you know, one of the leaders out there in chat, and it used to be everybody. In fact, Andrew in chat was threw out his ICQ number, so you'd always know the early adopters by how low their ICQ number was. And there's some of the old tech guys who are very proud. I mean, they memorized their ICQ number.
Or just how low their IQ number was.
Oh, ouch. So and I remember using it, and of course that moved from that to AOL. And you know, it's funny, as soon as I mentioned ICQ, I heard my wife laugh upstairs. So it's been a while since I mentioned that. But yeah, it was one of those things. And you know, in the early days, for folks who were adopting it, it was kind of a badge of honor to have a low ICQ number. So anyways. Okay, so a lot.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
Such a schoolboy application, you know, like everyone wants to hop on, and it's like, what am I doing here again?
Well, I remember a time when Facebook was kind of that way, and there were a handful of people on Facebook, and now that's kind of the mainstay, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. We talked about that last week. A lot of stuff going on Facebook. And certainly there's no way to tell whether you're an early or a late adopter on Facebook. There should be an established date. That would be when you establish your Facebook account, so people could take pride in that. Well, anyways, those are different kinds of ways for you to access your computer, either remotely. Brian, thanks for writing that up, and that's very interesting. I'll have to take a look at that. And because that seems like a pretty cool little application to do remote, especially maybe with my Droid, although that's kind of small.
Right. Yeah, but it's just kind of cool to kick back in whatever room you want to kick back in and access to your Windows PCs on your iOS device or Android. So.
Yeah, very cool. Well, we coined a new phrase last week, a new segment of the show that we now belovedly call Christian's Corner. And we've been working on a jingle. Actually, what I'd like, if you're listening to the show and you're musical in any way, if you come up with a jingle, we'll send those to us, we'll consider those to be played on the show. So some kind of little quaint little, you know, Christian's Corner. It's got to say Christian's Corner in it. But come up with those. Make them as fun or as funny as you want. And who knows, maybe it will stick on the show and you will become famous. But Christian, you got a couple items for us this week. And why don't we get to those and then we'll wrap things up.
Sure. Well, the first one that was kind of, well, not funny, but funny, is this article. Facebook got hacked, but the target was Zuckerberg. And it was his page was successfully, used to make a comment on his wall that obviously he didn't make. And so obviously it brought up, you know, there's a bug, and they didn't really say much, but they said that the bug was fixed. But it's just kind of funny, you know, you go back to this thing, you know, Facebook millions of people trust, and, you know, I still use it and, you know, trust, but it's like the guy who wrote the software just got it handed to him. So
yeah, and for those who don't know, Mark Zuckerberg is the founder of Facebook. If you've seen The Social Network, that movie is about him. Was the message something like, my sister's the greatest person ever and she loves me more than anything? I've seen some comments of sisters who've broken into their brothers' accounts and have written that on their page. Was it something like that?
No, well, it was something along the lines, the message called for the site to become a social business with investment from users and that kind of stuff. But I kind of find it funny, this quote here. One of the people commented, the other possibility is that Mr. Zuckerberg strode away from his desk for a while and someone grabbed it in and typed the message in. So
his administrative assistant got in there and started typing.
Well, it's kind of funny because you think anything that gets that large like Facebook did, there's always going to be a higher probability of some kind of security flaw. Mm-hmm. But I just had one of those total Hollywood moments that really doesn't apply here when in The Social Network at the beginning of the movie, when Zuckerberg is downloading all the photos off Harvard servers, and he's sitting here exploiting all their security, and I was just kind of like, well, now you just got exploited. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm a critic about this, if I feel like this was to come again. And I don't know if there's any words to the wise in this case, too, because it seemed like a really specific message and just a really specific target. So obviously, I don't think anyone's security is compromised, so I'm not gonna run down on any of that, but I just kind of found it interesting.
Well, really, though, you don't store your financial information on Facebook. You don't store your credit card information on Facebook, although maybe some can you? Can you put your credit card number in Facebook? I've never done that.
I don't know why the heck you would.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing I'd be worried about getting hacked is somebody saying things that I wasn't going to say, you know. And I don't know how damaging that is. But, yeah, so certainly the Zuck, as he's known as in some circles, got hacked. And that is kind of comical. And it is old school hacking, right? I mean, that was in the 90s. That was kind of real popular, to hack a website and leave a malicious message on the front page or something along those lines. So that's kind of old school hacking taken to a new school social media site.
Yeah.
I got you.
On the tails of that article, it's worth mentioning that Facebook actually increased their security. So you can access your site over HTTPS.
Oh, yeah, I've been doing that. Yeah, I have been doing that.
Really?
Yeah, it's buried deep in your account settings, but
do you have to enable that to make that work?
Yeah, you have to opt in.
Oh, okay. Well, do you know where that setting is at? You say it's in the security settings somewhere.
Yeah, you go.
That's fine. I put you on the spot. Not a big deal.
Account.
It must be enabled in mine, because all I did was type in https://hackhack, you know, the / facebook.com, and it worked.
Yeah, but that's only for the homepage. So, like, if you go to your wall or go to something else, it'll go back.
Okay, so if I go to my profile, I see. So okay. I've got to go in.
So you enable it, you go to account settings, and then the third one from the bottom, it says account security.
Right.
Click change, and it should be in there to
secure browsing.
It very slowly.
Well, I have it. So. I have it. The very first option says secure browsing, HTTPS. Browse Facebook on a secure connection whenever possible. So I'm going to select that and click save.
Yeah, I don't have it yet. So.
All right. So it automatically put. Oh, you don't have it yet, huh?
No.
Well, hack Facebook. So I just selected that, and now let's see. No matter where I go, let me go to my profile. Yeah. Yeah, that works. So what that means is I'm coming across port 443 as opposed to port 80, and I have a secure connection between myself and Facebook, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So a certificate is being passed. That's kind of cool to know. I didn't know that. I mean, now, and that will follow me, do you think? If I go, so from work now, if I go into Facebook with my account, is it going to automatically flip over to HTTPS?
Yeah, it should be on their server end, so.
Oh. Well, that's very. So why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't everybody do that? Why don't they just do that by default? If I'm in a internet cafe and they don't have the most secure router, I mean, that would be the way to stop people from phishing your Facebook traffic, right?
Right. Yeah, it was actually in response to one of the programs. I forget, Fire Sheep or something like that.
In Firefox, that would kind of sniff the network, right?
Unsecure right.
networks, and pick up traffic.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I'd heard that on Windows Weekly or one of those. Could have been this week in Google or one of those with one of Leo's shows, but hadn't really implemented it. And that's not really difficult to do. So it's just in your account settings. That's a good catch. Christian, anything else on that on Facebook? You ready to move on to the next one?
No, yeah, and I think we've covered good old.
Okay, you got anything else for Christian's Corner?
Christian Corner is going to pass on to Brian the question that we brought up last week about Hulu and where we're going with Hulu and what the company is doing with it. So I'm going to let Brian start off with that.
Okay. Basically, what's going on with Hulu, I just read that the CEO had threatened to quit because he wanted more competitive pricing for their service versus Netflix. And when you think about it, I mean, it's $9.99. The interface isn't that great, in my opinion. It's kind of difficult to find programs and organize them in a decent way. And also,
now, Brian, one sec before you go too far. So there is a free version of Hulu, and then there's Hulu Premium or Hulu Plus or
Hulu
something
Plus,
like that.
Right.
And Hulu is just a for folks who don't know, Hulu is just a content aggregator or content aggregation site that takes content off the internet and puts it kind of all in one place for you to watch it. So it's got TV shows and do they have movies?
Yeah, yes, they have sometime. Movies.
Okay.
Old movies.
So not a great collection of movies, but they're kind of known for the TV shows, right? I mean, that's kind of what folks watch Hulu for. So free version and a paid version. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so with the paid version, it's $9.99, and you also have to watch ads, where the streaming with Netflix is a lot cheaper. I think their cheapest program for streaming only is only $5.99 with no ads. So,
which is dynamite, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Netflix,
and it's available on so many devices as well. I mean, it's insane. It's everywhere.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, guys, how long ago – let me change the subject real quick. And I don't know. This is more philosophical than anything else. But, you know, it wasn't too long ago that Blockbuster dominated the video rental business, right? I mean, just – a handful of years ago, 3-4 maybe, and they've been on a downward slide and then just most recently filed for bankruptcy. All right, so Netflix is now the king, I think. I think that would be safe to say when it comes to video rentals. So what do they have to do to continue to be on top, and who could come along and do it better and take that away from them?
From Netflix?
Netflix, yeah. So what is Netflix doing that – what are they not doing well right now? And so in the era, you know, when Blockbuster were stores that you would go to and Netflix came along and they said, we'll mail them to you, Blockbuster didn't change, right? They just kept their model and they slowly became irrelevant. Netflix and everybody switched over. Hey, I send these things to me. If I don't have to go to the video store, that's great. And then they started streaming. From a Netflix standpoint, if you were going to go after the Netflix model, you were going to start a company to compete with Netflix and beat them, much like Netflix beat Blockbuster. What would you do today to beat Netflix at their own game?
Personally, I'd probably try to negotiate contracts with the movie companies to get better new releases available.
Yeah. No, right on. I think, Brian, you hit it right on the head there. And maybe I was fishing for that a little bit. But yeah, they don't today. Their Achilles heel is they don't get Blockbuster movies fast enough. You know, it's out in the stores. It's available for them to send them to you, but you can't stream them. And I think there's some issues. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I still think there's some issues with the production or the who's the group that controls the distribution of movies. I think they don't want that, right? They still want to be able to sell those DVDs at Walmart for whatever they are. It's been so long since I bought a DVD new. What are they, like $15 new, $20?
Yeah, around there.
Something like that. Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Guys, it's been forever since I bought a video.
I bought a couple Blu-ray discs for $15 in the cheap bin. So
yeah.
And, you know, and that's Blu-rays, so, which is a lot better.
Yeah. Because I kind of like the Hulu desktop, but obviously it's not anything for taking. I don't think it's going to be anything that would even come close to knocking out where Netflix has gone. But Blockbuster is still open near my house, actually. And I went in there to get to rent The Social Contract the social contract, social network movie.
You gonna put a contract out? Is that
yeah,
what you
I know,
said?
Right? Yeah. So, and they offered to let the movie rental be free if you tried a 14-day trial of their new online streaming thing.
Yeah, they're so far behind. They're never.
Yeah, and you know they were advertising it as like you know. This movie's already out on our streaming service and it's not on Netflix, but I mean, they jumped that gun just way, hey, too late. Yeah. I don't think anyone's going to come.
And isn't that funny that if Hulu came along and did that, it would probably be popular. But if Blockbuster does it now, people will kind of go, not a big deal. You know, isn't that funny?
Yeah.
It's like they've already missed the boat. You know, they missed the opportunity.
Because you think of like everyone used to always use the term Blockbuster, you know, it's a Blockbuster event, yeah. You know, and now it's like, right. No, it's not.
It's a Netflix event, right?
Yes. I mean,
isn't that funny? And I remember when Netflix first came out and I remember telling people, hey, there's this new thing online and you can subscribe to it and they'll mail you videos or mail you DVDs. And I remember people kind of looking at me funny, like, really? I mean, I don't know.
Have to go to the store?
Yeah, I don't know if I trust that kind of deal, you know, and it took a while for folks to make the changeover. One of the interesting, so, you know, when we talk about Hulu versus Netflix, so if those are the two that are left, and they're not, there's plenty out there, but Hulu's 2010 revenue was $260 million, Netflix, $21.6
billion. Wow.
No. I'm sorry, $2.16 billion. Still.
I was going to say, still.
260 versus $2.16 billion. That's, you know, Netflix is a lot larger. Hulu does have a free and a $7.99 a month for their Plus and Netflix plan. It says here their lowest streaming plan is $7.99. So they're very similar from that standpoint. Hulu offers free and new TV episodes from ABC, Fox, NBC, and others. Hulu Plus includes unlimited streaming of additional TV episodes and access to free Hulu on various devices. Netflix has unlimited streaming of thousands of movies and TV episodes, which, by the way, is Netflix strength is their TV episodes. I think that's where they dominate in the space. They do have a lot of them there. So some sample of online content with Hulu, 6 seasons of Lost, 36 seasons of Saturday Night Live, and the first season of Glee. I can't believe I had to say Glee on my podcast. On Netflix, some prior seasons of Family Guy, 30 Rock, and Grey's Anatomy. We watch all the sci-fi stuff seems to make it to Netflix just fine, and we watch it. And we watch it there. I think one of the strengths of both is they're on tons of different platforms, right? So they're both on... you can get on your computer, your iPad, your PlayStation 3, your Roku streaming player. With Netflix, that's on Xbox 360 as well. So it's just about and some I know some Samsung TVs have apps that you can download, and Netflix is one of them. So you can have Netflix right on the TV. You don't need any of those players.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
It is indeed. Well, guys, tonight I have a hard stop, and I've got a call to make that's overseas, and so I need to get going here. But anything else before we wrap this thing up?
I think we're pretty good.
Good. Well, we appreciate you listening to the Home Tech Podcast. We would like your suggestions. You know, each and every week we get together before the show and during the week, you know, we kind of communicate with each other on, hey, what do you want to talk about this week as we get together? But certainly your input on what we do on the show, very valuable to us. So if you send us a email podcast at theaverageguy.tv, that always helps us. That always helps us out. And sometimes if you have a suggestion or something that we can cover, we'd like to hear that as well. You can also follow the show. The easiest way to know what's going on with the show is to follow me on Twitter. I am just at Jay Collison, Collison. Brian, what's your Twitter account?
At Mystic Geek.
Mystic Geek. And Christian?
Non-existent at
non-existent. you know I'm just baiting you on that, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So oftentimes Brian and I will tweet out what's going on live with the show. I will make an announcement since I will try and get this out, I think, before the weekend. This Sunday, I'll be down in Kansas City at the Groundhog 10K. It's an event that they do inside a cave. Well, it's really not a cave. It's kind of a mined-out storage facility in some bedrock down there. It's a constant 65 degrees. There's a 5K course inside this facility. It's huge. And you run it twice for this 10K. It's a really unique race. I'm going to be down there. I have my phone with me. We'll do some live streaming right here at theaverageguy.tv/live. So the last thing you're probably going to want to do is wake up early on Sunday morning and watch me do some live streaming. But I'm going to do it anyways. Don't care. So if you are having trouble sleeping, or maybe you work that shift and you want to jump on, watch Twitter. I'll tweet that before I get out there. We'll do some live streaming. Once we get in the cave, all cell phone signals cease to work. I'm taking my podcasting machine with me, and we'll be doing some live interviews of folks who are going to be running that race. So if you listen to the Fitness Tech podcast, one of the other ones that that I do on the site, that will get posted to the Fitness Tech section next week. So something that's kind of fun to do. And then the last thing is we actually launched our very first financial tech podcast. I was telling Brian that was kind of a surprise. Brian, you got a chance to listen to that. Andrew Hunt and I spent about 30 minutes talking about technology in the financial sector. He's a vice president at the Gallup Federal Credit Union. And so that was kind of fun. Brian, you could listen to it. It was okay.
Yeah. I listened to it and I thought it was really good. I really enjoyed it. You guys flowed really smooth. So,
Andrew's fantastic at podcasting, and so that is also at theaverageguy.tv if you want to go out and listen to that podcast. We're going to do every 2 weeks or so just to get things going. There's not a ton to, the financial world almost never changes around technology, so there's not tons to talk about. We'll do that every 2 weeks. Last thing I want to do, I want to thank the listeners. We've had some record, the last two weekends have been some record numbers for the podcast as far as folks downloading and subscribing and listening to the podcast. We watch those numbers every week. I watch those numbers every day. It's kind of fun to watch them go, and we appreciate you listening to the show. If you get a chance, if you've been enjoying it and you like it, recommend it to a friend. Just send them over to theaverageguy.tv and maybe help them get it on their iPod or Zune player or their MP3 player of choice. So thanks for coming out this week. Thanks for listening. Those in the Ustream, we had a couple join us. And Andrew, good to have you in there. And for the others that I didn't get to see, thanks for joining us in the Ustream. We do the live broadcast each week somewhere around 7 o'clock on Thursdays Central Time. And if you come out to theaverageguy.tv/live, you'll be able to hear us. Guys, have a good weekend. I'm sure that the three of us will be talking throughout the weekend. But thanks for coming out and have a great weekend.
Hey, good luck on your run, Jim.
Yes. Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. So appreciate
you it. Bet. All Happy right. computing, everyone.
That's right. Good night.
Night.
Bye.